Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special in-studio guest, which is unusual, is Susie Lavis. Susie is the CEO of Lavis Tax Wealth Management with nearly four decades of experience. At age 13, Susie started in the tax business assisting her father, Richard Lavis. After completing her education, she and her father became business partners, eventually forming Lavis Tax Wealth Management. Today, she serves as the leader of the team. As an enrolled agent, a tax preparer, and a financial advisor with HD Vest Investment Services, she can assist clients with a wide array of services, and she has had me as a client for many years. Susie, welcome to our show.
Very good. Thank you.
Not too many 13-year-olds are saying, gosh, I'd like to do some taxes with my dad. Why was that interesting?
At a young age, my dad was going to the houses and doing taxes. And that was back in the day when you got the forms from the IRS and the Franchise Tax Board, and we used, you know, carbon paper.
Yeah.
And he'd come back, and it was my job to schedule him and get directions and just organize him. And at 13, it was kind of cool because he bought me a typewriter and, and a calculator, and I loved that stuff. And it was like a game. But then as we kept going, when I was a junior in high school, I actually took H&R Block's basic course, and I really started helping him do taxes when I was in high school.
What you've just said, too, you don't realize sometimes how easy the business has gotten in the sense of access to computers and changing mistakes and calculating things. Back then, I mean, a mistake was probably a problem.
It really was interesting because there was a lot of math. This is going back a long ways, but back then there was something called income averaging.
Right.
And you took four prior year tax returns. It was just a whole lot of math. But, you know, when you got the return done, sometimes the client would walk in and say, oh, really? I'm sorry. I forgot this. And then all the math, you start all over. Yeah. And so that's when Dad decided, okay, I need to hand this off to somebody. And that was me.
And back then, you actually had to do math, and it wasn't as easy as pushing buttons. You probably had to do some of it on the paper.
It was all manual.
Yeah.
Yes. We're talking about, this is how old I am, before computers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when you actually had to know numbers.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny today because you walk in and if the computer's down, you know, they have a team to give you change for five.
Yeah.
You're going, the calculator's broke. I'm not going to get the right change.
Yeah.
Tax law changes. Was there any major things that got changed that happened in 2015 or coming, this coming year, that might affect us?
That's a good question. I should have actually listed dates and when things pass, but there's always something, and often something will pass and then it starts kicking in later.
Right.
So
sometimes in arrears.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's always something changing.
Okay.
Yeah.
In California, I mean, we had one that was in arrears, right? Didn't they raise the tax on income that was accelerating past a certain amount? They said, oh, by the way, we're going to go back and charge you for something. It seems like I remember there was something that they passed at the end of the year that you didn't know was coming. So it's unfortunate when that happens.
Yeah.
You can't do too much tax preparing when that's
the comes. One I can think of that maybe you're speaking of, and I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but on the payroll side, because there were so many folks that were on unemployment, our California amount that we were contributing as employers to unemployment was actually not enough. And what we pay as employers is also to the federal unemployment, the FUTA.
Right.
And California had to get money from the feds for our unemployment. So we're actually, at the end of the year, our employers in California had to pony up more unemployment tax that we weren't, you're right, weren't expecting.
Okay, maybe that was it. When you do taxes, there's kind of a group mood that you feel.
Yes.
So 2005 and 6, woohoo. 2009, I remember talking to you, and it was sort of like, I mean, you go through months of long days talking in front of people that are very sad about where they're at.
Yes.
That's a tough deal.
Yes.
So what's been the mood in 2016?
I'm now getting the call that prices are up and people are wanting to shift where their assets are. So pretty regularly now I'm getting, and fortunately my clients have been with me along, and we've tried to instill, please give me a call, let me help you with decisions and not come in after they're already over. You know, so fortunately that's happening. So we get the call and the client will ask, okay, I'm thinking of selling this rental property or what have you. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, you tell me what you think you're going to list it for and whatnot, and let me do the math and calculate that before you decide you're actually going to sell it. And in most times, it's making the client rethink that sale, because once they know what the tax cost is, it's pretty devastating.
I mean, you're pretty young for being in business for 40 years, of course. So you have clients that are gone through like their entire cycle and have retired. What are they doing to get yield?
You have a lot of folks that are so used to just being happy in a CD, and they're not. And in many cases, because that's all they know,
right,
they're just shrinking their life.
So they're adapting to a lower income.
Yes, yes. And in many cases, the older generation, they're not the type to spend money anyway. They have wealth. And if you said, why don't you start spending it? They wouldn't even know how. They've saved their whole entire life. So they have no debt, and the need to spend it isn't really big. Our generation, though, is going to be a little different.
Now, we've been different, because I remember asking you just about the likelihood of them contributing to their retirement accounts and all that, and you were just going, no.
Yeah.
That's not a big habit of theirs.
Once generally. ERISA passed, and now it's a defined contribution plan, meaning 401k and simples and IRAs and Roths, it is the taxpayers' responsibility now to save for themselves. Now, in many cases, you can do that through your employer, but when you're working for smaller employers, often it's not even available at a smaller employer.
But do people take money out of, are we becoming better savers?
No.
No.
Not at all.
But is that because of necessity now, that most of what we make, we need to spend just to make it?
I think it's twofold. I think it's that, you know, our life is bigger than our income, you know?
Right.
And the lack of education, you know? I think the stock market has people nervous, and when you, not just nervous, but they don't really truly understand it.
Okay.
So why would you do something you don't understand?
Okay.
So
the prospects sort of feeling uneasy in a way.
Certainly.
Okay. Because what they're used to isn't paying. Maybe shifting to something completely different is scary.
Yes.
So you just learn to live with less. And
yes.
Okay.
And you know, human nature is the scariest thing in the whole world is the unknown. But what's interesting is it might be scary and uncomfortable, but many people don't like change either. That's
right.
Another big one. So even though they don't like it, most people don't change.
I just spoke last night, and so I did some preparing, and sovereign debt is a very unusual thing right now. 40% of it pays negative. Mm-hmm. That's kind of crazy.
It's a lot crazy.
Can you imagine getting a 10-year T-bill and having, at the end of it, pay you less than your original principal was?
Right.
That's in Sweden. You know how long that goes on? To the 50-year T-bill.
Oh, my.
You can buy a 50-year T-bill and lose money the whole 5 decades. Yeah. That's just pretty, I'm just shaking my head going, what does that mean? You know, I'm not sure I'm smart enough to figure that out.
I'm with you.
The taxpayer, now you have kind of two types of businesses in a way. You have an HR block.
Yes.
Okay, and that might deal with people that are in the beginning, let's say, of their life, or not as financially involved in all this other stuff that like houses. So my question was really, how do they view home ownership if they don't own one? Is that something that they just can't wait to do, or it's just like, eh?
You would think when I first acquired the H&R Block that that was the case, that it was the beginning people in their life and it's a simple returns. And yes, we have that from the day you can e-file a return till about Valentine's Day, the middle of February. That's when those clients are in. Those are the littler returns. Okay. But after that, the clientele is the same as every other practice.
Okay.
And it is interesting how many people will walk in without an appointment and not really a connection as much to the preparer. They're more connected to the brand.
Okay.
What I am hearing, though, and I'm certain you already know this, that the younger folks are staying at home with mom and dad longer. They've got a lot more student loan debt. They have debt, but yet not necessarily a good job or a job. And the need to get married is delayed, or want to get married is delayed. So establishing a home is just delayed from what we were used to.
Right. So becoming a household of their own instead of early 20s seems like it could be all the way to early 30s.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Still going to get there.
Maybe.
Okay.
I think, though, don't you think a lot of folks have watched the crash and burn and they think, wow, I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, I think there's a residual effect that no chart can really tell mm-hmm. you the hesitancy that exists. Mm-hmm. So if you lived in a home where you saw your mom and dad go from a 500 grand house to a 250 house, 0400, lose the house, yeah, you probably go, yeah, I can't wait to sign up for one of those.
Exactly.
So maybe, you just go, I don't. There was an interview that show Shark Tank. They have the guy,
yes.
Mr. Wonderful.
Yes.
Okay. Well, he was being interviewed with Doug Duncan, the economist from Fannie Mae. And so Doug gave his take on the housing thing. And he says, you know, not coming from a statistical point of view, but I own 21 companies that the predominant employee is a millennial. And in my opinion, they don't want to own anything.
Right.
Not only a house, they don't want to own a car.
Right.
They just want to own anything. They want to be call
free.
Uber.
Yes.
I mean, live close and call Uber.
Yes.
And literally just have their life contained like they live in Manhattan almost, you know, where you can go two blocks and then there's another one of those.
Yes.
So you can live very tight areas.
It's interesting that you bring up Manhattan. My husband's cousin lives in Manhattan. We were there last July.
Okay.
And so this is the kind of conversation I like to have with folks. So tell me about your life and the money, how it works. And let me match that to how my money and how mine works.
Okay.
Right? And so you think of our home. We have the big house. We've got the yard,
which has
the gardener.
Which has the dirt and grass.
Yes. And we have the gardener and the pool guy and the tree guy.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't have that. You know, he's got his biggest bill, he says, is services. So when you look at his life, how
food delivery services,
yes, and the concierge or the doorman, and right to take care of all these things, and no need for car.
Right.
But when you also take all these things out of your life, you take away the expense, but think about the time. Think about the time it frees up, right? Because even though I have the landscaper and the pool guy and all the people, it's still. How many hours do we spend still working on our house and all that, right?
So it's a lifestyle they just get used to and they don't really want to sign up. Now, in a Manhattan, it's not even available. You can't say, well, I want to have a house with a yard. Well, that's Long Island.
Right.
It's not Manhattan.
Yeah.
You're going to go up and you're going to have no... I mean, that's why they have Central Park, so someone can actually go see a tree in New York City.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's a group, you know, group therapy was over there. There's grass and there's a tree like you used to have it. It's different, I guess. And I know Aaron, he lived there and he really got acclimated to public transportation because owning a car in Manhattan is stupid.
It is.
I mean, park it where?
Exactly. And if you find a place, it's going to cost a mint.
Right. It costs you $3,000 a month to have it. If we'll forget that.
Yeah.
So, it is different. And I guess that would be a major sea change if that really is what they ultimately want to stay with. You know, because that, if you're a developer, if you're a builder, you're probably going, come on, guys, buy a house. Show up and buy a beginner house. But I don't think that's... I know I can look at a chart and say, well, that isn't happening.
I don't think so.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. What about the deduction part? You know, that's one of the reasons why people think, okay, well, you know, if I own a home, I get to deduct the interest and all that. There's a pretty big gap between when you have you know, you fill out your standard deduction. What is the standard deduction for a married couple? It's like 12 grand or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you have
and
to...
And then you think about the interest rate.
Right. The interest rate's 4, so you have to owe a lot of money before you get there.
And what? And that's what's kind of sad, is you get a person that walks through the door and they think they're going to get the smoking deduction.
Right.
And it really doesn't make that big of a deal.
It may not even get there.
In some cases, if they bought it at the end of the year, no.
Well, I mean, they have to owe... They'd probably have to owe 400 grand.
Yeah.
To make it. And then it's only the difference, right?
Right.
So they're probably thinking, well, that wasn't as big a deal as I thought.
Exactly, right.
How well are people prepared for surprises financially? So I know they're not good savers for retirement, but just for a cushion of, like, comfort.
I would tell you that a good chunk of Americans are probably a paycheck away from bankruptcy.
Wow.
In fact, there was an article in the paper, I don't know, a couple months ago, that when there is a snafu in someone's life, they were interviewed, where do you get the money? You know, it's, oh, go to a family or friend or go to a credit card.
Right.
But it's not go to a savings account.
It's just no buffer.
Mm-mm.
Is that, see, I think that's habit. It's not just lack. It's habit, because I remember I was the kid that saved stuff. I mean, I was just that guy. I always wanted, like, even when my mom gave me a quarter, I would be going, if I buy this, do I get change? I always wanted something that was not touchable, and it was over there. And whenever I get asked about, you know, how do you end up having stuff, I always give them this one book, and it's basically talks about the ability to set money aside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the habit. If you don't develop it, it just, it doesn't seem like it ever grows very much, unless you could just force it to go over there and hide it by itself.
Well, it's another interesting thing about financial literacy. I mean, I think that was already a problem, right? But now it's different. I mean, parents weren't teaching kids about money, and you're talking about something you held in your hand, a dollar or a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're not talking about it, that. We're talking about it's electronic.
Right.
Right? How did most folks get in trouble with their finances? Oh, they just swiped their card, and they lost track of how much they spent.
Mm-hmm.
But years ago, when it was actually cash, well, you'd open the wallet and it would be gone.
Right.
Right? Well,
that was over then. Right.
It's over. Well, you don't see it that way now.
No.
Necessarily.
No,
right?
That's true.
So, I mean, just keeping track of things, I think, is a challenge within itself.
Do you see the category of health insurance or health costs becoming a bigger piece of everybody's pie?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are surprised at that. I think they thought, oh, with Obamacare, life is going to get better, but I haven't seen that, so no.
And what about the choice not to have insurance in California? Is there a line item that costs you tax-wise?
Yeah, it's not a California problem, it's a federal problem.
It's a federal problem, okay.
Yeah. And it's increasing, so we're on the third year now. So the first year was like 1%. Of your income, then it was 2%. It's going to continue to grow to the point where it will be cheaper to buy insurance than pay the penalty. Yeah.
2% of your gross?
That was last year, yeah.
So it grows to 100, you pay 2 grand as a penalty not to have insurance.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's could get out of hand.
Yes.
Is there a limit to that?
There is a limit, but okay. It's going to, every year it's growing. That number keeps growing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
2005 and 6, you and I talked, and the typical thing was for somebody to pull out money constantly.
Yes.
So 2003, 4, and 5, refiing every 6 months, or equity lines that grew. What's the habit now?
Believe it or not, I'm starting to see it again.
Okay. I felt like that was probably true. That's why I wanted to ask.
I'm seeing it again, but on the other hand, I'm hearing that the loans are tougher to get now.
It is.
Yeah.
It all goes through these cycles, and it'll be very interesting to see where this cycle ends, because it got so generous and then it got so stingy.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're floating back up to not even halfway to medium yet, but it'll be interesting to see. And I think part of it will be on the performance of the borrower. So if they can eke out risk and it gets rewarded with timely payments, they'll eke out more risk.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on who gets president, you know, you could have a definite policy change and all that. So that's mm-hmm. just interesting. What percentage of the clients that you have would you say own their health?
Well, prior to H&R Block, it was probably a majority, because that's the type of clientele I developed. And then with the H&R Block practice, we doubled our practice. We went from 2,500 returns. Now we're doing about 5,000 returns.
Wow.
And in the H&R Block side, now we have some of the smaller returns that don't own homes. So I don't know, maybe we have 10% or 15% of the clients that don't own a home now.
Okay, well, that's... Yeah. Obviously, you have a very unusual clientele. That's, yeah. So it seemed to be. The clientele that are getting in retirement age, are most of them, like the great majority of them, are they staying in California when they retire?
I always heard that, but I don't hear that quite as much anymore.
Okay.
So far, it seems to be holding true.
Okay.
Just recently, I've had a couple that moved, but they moved because they wanted to be closer to the family, which that's normal. Not because they said, oh, I need to leave here because I need to find a cheaper place to live. However, my age group, I'm 54, my age group, many of them aren't going to make it to retirement and have enough money. So now that is a discussion point. You know, we have to be saving more to get there, to mm-hmm. make it to the finish line. And now they are looking to say, well, I don't know. I'm hearing the talk more. I don't know that I have enough money to retire here.
The $250,000 and $500,000 non-taxable on your residence, I was shocked that it ever showed up, to be honest with you. That rule, that's amazing to me. Do you think that that's going to stick around, or is that going to be one of the things that probably goes away?
I haven't heard that it's going to go away, and I don't feel like it's an area that's being used well.
Okay.
So let me tell you what I mean by that. You have to live in your home 2 out of the last 5 years, right?
Right.
But my goodness, you could pocket $250,000 or $500,000 every two years,
yeah.
Right? So if you wouldn't be so stuck in that home and you were maybe someone that was willing to move a little bit and maybe had some skill and you bought the fixer-upper in a nice neighborhood, lived there and worked on it for 2 years, just think of the wealth, the tax-free wealth you could build.
Yeah.
But, you know, in my whole practice, I don't have any, even though I share that brilliant idea.
And you don't do it yourself.
I don't do it myself.
No, and I don't do it either.
I know.
I guess that's interesting. Maybe yeah. It really isn't a big a deal. I don't know anyone that's working on their house to move.
Yeah.
Again and again.
Right.
Although you'd look at the numbers and go, well, you're actually pretty smart. Where else are you going to get that tax-free money?
Right.
Got a couple minutes left. Retirement money extraction. So it's in the 401k. At what age do I have to take stuff like that, or out of my Roth or my IRA?
Okay, you're allowed to start taking at 59 and a half with no penalty, but you're required to start taking some at 70 and a half.
Okay, at 70 and a half. Now, that's also sort of the tip of the Social Security number. So I'm 63. So I've really actually looked at the Social Security payment chart. I'm going to wait till 70 because it mm-hmm. grows at 8% a year.
Yes.
Which is, in today's environment, that's kind of amazing.
Pretty sweet.
And it's not taxable because it just sits there.
Now, the only math that would goof it up
okay.
is you just can't die.
I can't die. I have to live till I'm... Well, I think that's what's going to be interesting. For the federal deficit, you know, there could be a lot of people that say, okay, instead of getting $2,200 a month, I'm going to get $4,000
yeah.
a month. And they're looking at their math going, oh, this is not going to work out so good.
But in reality, most clients are actually starting, you know, you're allowed to start at 62. And
right.
I'll tell you, most of my clients are starting early.
At 62?
Even though you show them what it could do, is because that unknown thing, if you pass away, then you get nothing. Right? I mean, there's that
yeah.
I don't want to leave anything on the table thing.
I guess.
So I don't know.
When you have a Roth, and we got 30 seconds, I guess you have the same clock, maybe.
I do.
Okay. Do you ever have to take it out? It's not under the same rules.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do take gain out of a Roth, even at 63, that would not be taxable. Would that be correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they invented that.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that's another surprise. It's one of those vehicles you just thought, gosh, I'm glad that showed up.
But a lot of clients aren't converting to Roth because they worry that it won't hold.
I see. Susie, thanks for joining us. And phone number for your office is 951-300-9600.
Perfect.
And we're going to do another segment that has to do with specific property examples on selling and carrying paper and exchanges.
Awesome.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.